The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH, I'm Andy, your host, and on today's instalment I'm talking to you, originally recorded and broadcast on Sunday, July the 12th, 2026, at achshow.com. I will be presenting a show entitled Born on the 12th of July. And the time is 8:55 a.m. over here in London, England, and it is nice to be talking to you again. So, very quickly, how did today's show come about? I don't generally put out two shows a day, and I already put up the Sunday Parables show, the Parables of Jesus, a couple of hours ago. Well, yesterday I was looking at my diary, I was writing something in there as to where I've been that day. And I noticed on Sunday's entry, it says Battle of the Boyne, brackets Northern Ireland. And I thought to myself, well, I've ever done a show about this. And I looked up and found that I hadn't. I may have touched upon it, but there's certainly nothing in the title about it. So I looked it up and there's a Wikipedia page, what have you. And I actually found it quite interesting. So I thought you would too. As a result, I thought I would do this show. So today's show title, Born on the 12th of July, relates to the significance of today, July the 12th. It even has its own Wikipedia page entitled The 12th, which I'm going to read bits from for you now. So just get this into place. So I was only pulling this together earlier, so I haven't copied things into the script. I'm sort of jumping from page to page, so hopefully it'll all go well. So this is the Wikipedia page called The 12th. Here we go. The 12th, also called Orangeman's Day, is an Ulster Protestant celebration held on 12th of July. It celebrates the glorious revolution and victory of Protestant King William of Orange over Catholic King James II at the Battle of the Boyne. On and around the 12th, large parades are held by the Orange Order and Ulster Loyalist marching bands, streets are decorated with Union Jacks and bunting, and on the 11th night, large towering bonfires are lit. Today the 12th is mainly celebrated in Northern Ireland, where it is a public holiday, but some celebrations are held elsewhere, such as Scotland, Canada, Australia and West Africa. It is also a public holiday in Newfoundland and Labrador. The 12th began in the late 18th century in Ulster, and many Ulster Protestants see it as an important part of their culture. Some Catholics and Irish nationalists see it as anti-Catholic and supremacist. Since the beginning, it has been occasionally accompanied by sectarian violence, especially during times of political tension. Orange marches through Catholic neighbourhoods and the burning of Irish flags on bonfires are especially controversial. The Drumcree conflict is the most well-known dispute involving Orange marches. Sectarian violence around the 12th worsened during the Troubles, but today most events pass off peacefully. Recently, there have been attempts to draw tourists to the main 12th parades and promote them as family-friendly events. This demand was met with the festival known as Orange Fest, established in 2007. It takes place on the week leading up to the main day. When the 12th of July falls on a Sunday, the parades are held instead on the next Monday, 13th of July. Origins. Orange men commemorated several events dating from the 17th century onwards, celebrating the rise of Protestantism in Ireland after the Irish Rebellion of 1641 and triumph in the Williamite War in Ireland, particularly the Battle of the Boyne. Early celebrations were on the 23rd of October, the anniversary of the 1641 rebellion, and 4th of November, the birthday of William of Orange, Protestant victor of the Williamite War in the 1690s. Both of these anniversaries faded in popularity by the end of the 18th century. The 12th itself originated as a popular celebration of the Battle of Aughrim, which took place on 12th of July 1691 in the old-style Julian calendar then in use. Aughrim was the decisive battle of the Williamite War, in which the predominantly Irish Catholic Jacobite army was destroyed and the remainder capitulated at Limerick, whereas the Battle of the Boyne was less decisive. The commemorations continued in the early 18th century, featuring bonfires and parades. The Battle of the Boyne, fought on the 1st of July 1690, was commemorated with smaller parades on the 1st of July. However, the two events were combined in the late 18th century. The first reason for this was the British switch to the Gregorian calendar in 1752, which repositioned the nominal date of the Battle of the Boyne to 11th of July, New Style, with the Battle of Aughrim nominally repositioned to 23rd of July, New Style. The second reason was the founding of the Orange Order in 1795. The order preferred the Boyne due to William of Orange's presence there. It has also been suggested that when Catholicism was having a resurgence in the 1790s, the Boyne became more appealing to the order than Aughrim. The Jacobites were routed at the Boyne, whilst at Aughrim they had fought hard but suffered many casualties. The Order's first marches took place on 12th of July 1796 in Portadown, Lurgan and Warringstown. The 12th parades of the early 19th century often led to public disorder, so much so that the Orange Order and the 12th were banned in the 1830s and 40s. Events lead up. In the weeks leading up to the 12th, Orange Order and other Ulster Loyalist marching bands hold numerous parades in Northern Ireland. The most common of these are lodge parades, in which one Orange lodge marches with one band. Others, such as the Mini 12th at the start of July, involve several lodges. From June to August, Protestant Unionist areas of Northern Ireland are bedecked with flags and bunting, which are usually flown from lampposts and houses, most commonly the Union Jack and Ulster Banner. Curbstones are sometimes painted red, white and blue, and murals made. Steel or wooden arches covered with flags and orange symbolism are raised over certain streets. These orange arches are inspired by triumphal arches. Additionally, the flags of Loyalist paramilitary groups such as the Ulster Volunteer Force, the UVF, and the Ulster Defence Association, the UDA, are flown in some areas. The raising of these flags near Catholic Irish nationalist neighbourhoods or in neutral areas sometimes leads to tension and violence. It is seen as deliberately provocative and intimidating. Since 2007, the County Grand Orange Lodge of Belfast and the Belfast City Council organise Orange Fest. Launched as a public relations and tourism initiative, Orange Fest aims to reposition the traditional parade as a family-friendly, inclusive cultural festival. Orange Fest features events centred around Belfast City Hall, including international food markets, street performances and live music. It is held on the week leading up to the 12th. Orange Fest is also regional, as in 2025 Dundonald Purple Vine held Orange Fest in Moat Park and had a range of events for each day. This included selling merchandise, continental food stalls, live music, an awards night and children's fun activities. 11th night. On the night before the 12th, called 11th Night, huge towering bonfires are lit in many working-class Protestant neighbourhoods in Northern Ireland. They are built mostly of wooden pallets and lumber by local young men and boys in the weeks before the 12th. Their lighting is often accompanied by street parties and loyalist marching bands. 11th Night events have been condemned for sectarianism as well as the damage and pollution caused by the fires. Each year, Irish tricolours are burnt on many bonfires, and in some cases effigies, posters of Irish nationalist figures and Catholic symbols are also burnt. During the Troubles, loyalist paramilitaries used bonfire events to hold shows of strength in which masked gunmen fired volleys into the air. Some are still controlled by paramilitary members, and authorities are sometimes wary of taking action against controversial bonfires. However, not all bonfires are controversial, and there have been attempts to depoliticise the events and make them more family and environmentally friendly. Some bonfires are also criticised as being unsafely constructed or environmentally hazardous due to the use of tyres in their construction. Main events. The 12th is mainly celebrated with large parades involving Orange Men and supporting bands. Most of the parades are in Ulster, almost exclusively being held in Northern Ireland and County Donegal, although Orange Lodges elsewhere often hold parades as well. The parade usually begins at an Orange Hall, proceeds through the town or city and out to a large park or field where the marchers, their friends and family and the general public gather to eat, drink and listen to speeches by clergymen, politicians and senior members of the order. A church service will also be held and sometimes band prizes will be awarded. In the past, the 12th has been a major venue for discussion of political issues. Within Northern Ireland, each district lodge usually organises its own parade. In rural districts, the parade will rotate around various towns, sometimes favouring those in which there is less likely to be trouble, but in other years choosing those in which it is felt the right to march needs to be defended. There is a long tradition of Protestant and Loyalist marching bands found in most towns in Northern Ireland who are hired by the Orange Men to march in the parades. An instrument largely unique, An instrument largely unique to these marches is the lambeg drum. Popular songs include The Sash and Derry's Walls. More controversial songs such as Billy Boys are sometimes played as well. The vast majority of marchers are men, but there are some all-women bands and a few mixed bands. Some all-male bands have female flags or banner carriers. There are also some women's Orange Lodges which take part in the parades. Orange women have paraded on the 12th in some rural areas since at least the mid-20th century, but were banned from the Belfast parades until the 1990s. Orange men on parade typically wear a dark suit, an orange sash, white gloves and a bowler hat. Certain Orange men carry a ceremonial sword. In hot weather, many lodges will parade in short-sleeve shirts. Orange women have not developed a standard dress code, but usually dress formally. The supporting bands each have their own uniforms and colours. Both the Orange men and bands carry elaborate banners depicting Orange heroes, historic or biblical scenes, and or political symbols and slogans. The most popular image is that of King William of Orange crossing the River Boyne during the famous battle there. At the field, some lodges and bands don humorous outfits or accessories and make the return journey in them. The mood is typically relaxed and easygoing, with the atmosphere on the return route becoming even more festive and animated. The Northern Irish and County Donegal parades are given extensive local TV and press coverage, while the BBC Northern Ireland programme The 12th is the longest running outside broadcast programme in Northern Ireland. One of the largest orange demonstrations held anywhere each year is the annual parade held at Rossmulwar, a tiny village near Ballyshannon in the south of County Donegal in the west of Ulster. County Donegal being one of the Ulster counties in the Republic of Ireland, the Rossmulwar demonstration is the only major orange event in the Republic. A number of much smaller orange events take place each year in East Donegal as well. Okay, so rather than read from the lengthy controversies section, which I urge you to do at the Wikipedia page entitled The 12th, I'm going to give you my own controversy. William of Orange allowed the establishment of the first central bank, the Bank of England, in 1694, from which was born the global central banking scam that I have complained about over the years, so my Christian Protestant faith does not excuse this. Okay, so let's go back to the Wikipedia page entitled The 12th and carry on reading from the section entitled Outside Ulster. Britain. Although mostly an Ulster event, the 12th is also celebrated in other countries with strong links to Ulster or a history of settlement by Irish Protestants. There are commemorations of the 12th in Scotland, particularly in and around Glasgow, where a large amount of Irish Protestants settled. This parade is often referred to as the Big Walk, although this is typically held on the Saturday before July the 12th. In 2025, more than 100 Orange Order marches were scheduled to celebrate the Battle of the Boyne in Scotland, with 50 of those in Glasgow, similar to 2024, with over 3,500 Lodge and Band members taking part in Glasgow's celebrations. In England and Wales, Orange marches are not common, and Orange Order membership is found primarily in the Merseyside region, although numbers are still small. Marches here tend to be held a week or so before the 12th, due to the number of bands and lodges who travel to Northern Ireland to march there. The Liverpool lodges parade both in the city and in the seaside resort of Southport on the 12th of July. The Grand Lodges in the mainland are known as the Grand Orange Lodge of Scotland and the Grand Orange Lodge of England. The latter oversees the Orange Order in Wales. Canada. The 12th March was first held in Canada in 1821 and is the longest consecutively held parade in North America and the largest parade in Toronto, when thousands of Orange men would march in front of tens of thousands of spectators until the 1970s. At the time, the Orange Order held such sway that membership in the Order was an unspoken prerequisite for holding civic office. However, the march's popularity has drastically diminished in recent years, as only about 500 people participate in modern Orange parades. Orangeman's Day is still a provincial government-paid holiday in the Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador as of 2025. However, it is not a shops closing holiday. Australia. An increase in Orange Lodge membership in recent years has seen a revival of the Order in Australia, and an annual 12th of July parade is currently held in Adelaide. Parades were also formerly held in New Zealand on the 12th. The first 12th procession in Australia took place in Melbourne in 1843 with the establishment of the Loyal Orange Institution of Victoria. New Zealand. The first 12th of July procession in New Zealand took place in Auckland in 1877. In 2009, the Grand Orange Lodge of New Zealand travelled to County Donegal for the 12th of July procession and gave a speech. Ireland. Until the partition of Ireland in the early 1920s, the 12th was celebrated by Protestants in many parts of Ireland. However, the reduction of the Protestant population and relevance in the Republic of Ireland has resulted in the only remaining major annual parade now at Rossmulwar, County Donegal. It was held on the 12th until the 1970s, when it was moved to the weekend before. There are no major Orange events in the rest of Ireland outside of the nine-county province of Ulster. Former Tanaiste Michael McDowell said in 2010 that the 12th should be made a national holiday in the Republic of Ireland as well as in Northern Ireland. Spain. There is a big parade in Benidorm, Spain, first illegally held in 2005, but now a managed annual event sanctioned by the town hall. Africa. The Orange Order in Africa organised their own 12th of July parades. The most prominent West African lodges are the Grand Lodge of Ghana and the Grand Lodge of Togo. Local Orange lodges hold church services, parades and Thanksgiving events, similar in form to those in Northern Ireland, often incorporating brass bands, religious hymns and public processions through major towns such as Accra and Lomé. Historically, Nigeria, South Africa and Sierra Leone have celebrated the 12th of July. I'll have to try and remember to ask Peter about this on Tuesday. Togo. In Togo, the city of Lomé seen as... In Togo, the city of Lomé seen an inauguration of a dozen orange lodges. That's why I stumbled. It didn't make sense. In 1986, the 12th of July parade was conducted by R.W. Bro Dr. Atto Mensah, the Grand Chaplain, assisted by R.W. Bro F.K. Fiazza, the Deputy Grand Master, M.W. Bro Aboki Essien, the Grand Master of the Grand Orange Lodge of Togo, cited the Battle of the Boyne as a symbol of the confirmation of the Protestant faith. Lomé defenders of the Truth Orange Lodge, LOL 867, and other local branches host annual services led by local clergy, with sermons delivered in English, French, and Yu, the major regional language. Ghana. In Ghana, the 12th of July is marked annually by the Grand Orange Lodge of Ghana and its affiliated branches. Celebrations in Accra, Cape Coast and other towns mark Orangeman's Day, with celebrations of history and keeping the Protestant faith. Ghanaian Orangemen march in formal attire, sashes, dark suits and occasionally bowler hats. Finally, the United States. The first Orange Parade in the United States took place in Boston, Massachusetts in 1824. The Grand Orange Lodge of the United States was formally recognised by the Grand Orange Lodge of Ireland in January 1870. The first 12th of July took place that year in Manhattan, New York City. Due to the Orange Riots, Police Commissioner James J. Kelso banned the 12th parade. However, Governor John T. Hoffman overturned this decision and ordered a much greater NYPD and militia presence. And that ends the Wikipedia page. So I covered everything on it apart from the controversies section. I remember Mike Sledge once saying, if you just read non-stop from the article on a radio show, it can be a bit tiresome. But I've heard it done well in certain areas. I thought this was the best thing to go for, the Wikipedia page, because that's going to not be seen as biased towards any side. Well, some might argue certain things on Wikipedia are biased towards certain side, me included. But I thought that Wikipedia page gave a pretty interesting overview. And you can also look up the 12th of July for yourself. This gives you a starting block. This is what I try and do here on the show, is tell you about things to give you the impetus to go and start researching for yourself, as I did many years ago and ended up producing a book out of my research. It's important that you look into things for yourself and come to your own conclusions, not simply to somebody else's, because that somebody else might well be wrong. Only you know, through your own research, what you feel happy to believe. Okay, so that being said, let's see what I've got to moan about since Wednesday's show. Well, we'll start off with something I'm actually fairly happy about. That is that England got through their World Cup quarterfinal against Norway yesterday. I do like Erling Haaland of Norway. I think he's great, quite funny, and he plays for Manchester City in England, in the Premier League. I have a friend, I mentioned him before, my minicab driver friend Steve, who is a big follower of football, and he said to me at the start of the tournament, he said he thinks that England could get to the semi-final, so he's been proven right. I know he likes a gamble, I don't, but I hope he's had money on this, so it would be one of the few times he'll be able to tell me that he's won something. But when you look at who's got through, and there's in the semi-final lineup. England are going to be playing Argentina and Spain are going to be playing France. And I think anybody who was being honest, if they had to rank those teams, would probably put England at the bottom. So they're the least likely to proceed further. Argentina, who England will be playing in the semi-final, they are the actual holders of the World Cup. They won it when it was last held 4 years ago in 2022. France and Spain, many people tip France to be the winners. Spain and France, I think, have both won it this century. And England haven't won it since 1966. So on paper, it looks like England's run may come to an end in the semi-final. But when you look at how all these teams have played, it's really the luck on the day, quite honestly. None of the teams have really shone in their recent matches. I mean, France struggled against Morocco. Argentina, I believe they came back against Switzerland yesterday. They also had to come back against a previous opponent. Spain, I think, didn't they get a draw to Cape Verde in the first round? So it's really anybody's tournament, in my opinion. It's just based on luck on the day, really. So we will see how these things pan out. I'm going to click on this now because about an hour ago when I clicked on the BBC website, I had this headline. US Senator Lindsey Graham dies after brief and sudden illness, his office says. Well, back then there was like three lines, and it's basically, it's not giving the cause of death, but it's just basically giving a, looks like a brief description of his life here in the article. There's a picture of him. It says, Senator, the picture here, well, it's a video actually of him with Zelensky, 53 seconds. I can't play it because I don't have a TV license, and you have to have one to play any videos on the BBC. It says, watch, Senator Lindsey Graham visited Ukraine a day before he died. So was he still in Ukraine when he died? Well, interesting. I'm sure more will come out, and I'm going to give you a wager myself that when we click on AP or Reuters shortly, I imagine this Lindsey Graham death will be the top story. But we will see. Okay, so let's go back to the articles I've got. They're still talking about this El Nino business and the fact people are claiming this is going to be the worst El Nino ever. A guy called Tim Stockdale, who's an El Nino expert, he works at the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts, has basically said he can't see that this El Nino will not be the record breaker. So in other words, he's saying this is going to be the record breaking, it's going to be the worst. So it's not just hot events. You see, what generally happens from what I've learned about this is you get a year of extreme sort of heat, and then that can cause all these earthquakes and stuff like that. But then what happens is the following year, you can then get a load of cold weather coming in a winter thereafter. So it takes you to both sort of extremes. And it's very similar, isn't it, to the when they used to call it global warming, and then they were kind of stumped when things got cold, so they gradually changed it to climate change so they could cover themselves for both extreme cold and extreme hot events to promote their narrative. But another thing that I've read about the El Nino, which I found quite interesting, remember how the establishment like to ridicule people like ourselves as conspiracy theorists, things like that? One of the things that they point at is when we talk about how they can engineer the weather. Oh, well, that's conspiracy theory. And I pointed out before how the historical records show that cloud seeding was done in the Vietnam War, things like that. So these type of things they don't really like you to point out, because they thought that they tucked it away there, and someone who's interested in geoengineering and weather wouldn't be looking into that and join the dots, as they say. But a story from the Daily Mail, headline, is this the key to preventing a super El Nino? Scientists say artificially brightening the clouds could shield us from floods, extreme heat and wildfires. Well, many people in the geoengineering community would argue that they've been doing this already, and this is probably the cause, according to them, of these extreme weather events. But I find it interesting that now a mainstream publication such as the Daily Mail is talking about it. And one could argue as to whether what this could actually mean. I mean, let's go down. I might go down to the comments quickly and see if there's anything that people have said in the best rated anyone knows about. Not really. I just wondered if there was something that talked about geoengineering, but certainly not in the top rated anyway. But my point is if they have been causing this problem with geoengineering, then what they might do is to cover themselves, say that they're geoengineering now to try and stop it, but actually it went wrong. But what could they do? It got so hot, they had to do something. And if they'd have done nothing, they, you know, we would have been doomed anyway. Do you see where this could go and why this could be being inserted now? I might be right, I might be wrong. As I say, you need to be the judge of what you believe. I can provide ideas of what I think, but I'm always going to err on the conspiratorial side. I'm very distrusting of authority. I don't believe any governments are working for the people. I think they're all being controlled by the same group. Even governments that are supposed to be at war with each other, such as Russia and Ukraine and the United States and Iran, I think that these are all basically events that are organised by people above for their own reasons. But I may well be wrong. There's other people that you can listen to who take the geopolitical goings on in the world, such as wars, that will give you very different explanations to mine, and they, well, I listen to them and they sound believable too. So it's a question of seeing what you believe and going with that. And at the end of it, if you're wrong, at least you're honest, and at least you can say, look, all right, I've been proven wrong, but the reason I believed it was because of this, 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 and this. So you can't just be pointed to as somebody who just wanted to cause trouble by saying something controversial. You've got evidence to back up how you made or you came to the conclusions that you did. And whilst they'll be looking to outlaw that in the not-too-distant future, we need to work with what we've got while we've got it. I have much to say about Donald Trump on the last show about how he seems to be so addicted to getting awards, and this, I call it notositis, this talk about having his face put on Mount Rushmore, stuff like that. I mean, I thought about it, and when you think about sort of presidents, I mean, if any president was going to go there, they're going to put another face on, and this would be controversial to some, but you have to say that the most iconic president, certainly for people overseas, the one, if you had to name an American president, you'd say JFK, President Kennedy. And you could argue that he's certainly more, whether you agree with what he did or you didn't, he's certainly more of a legend. I mean, more people have heard of JFK than the four presidents that are up there, I would wager, outside of the United States. So how Trump thinks that he can leapfrog him. I mean, of course, he did add his name to the Kennedy Center again. Look this way. If I was president and somebody said to me, oh, I think we should put on the Kennedy Center, we should add the Kennedy Hitchcock Center. I mean, I'd say, well, no, I don't want to do that. That looks like, I'm trying to give it the big I am. You know, that's embarrassing. I wouldn't want to do that. I'd look like an idiot. But this guy just thinks it makes him look wonderful. And it's quite frightening when you think back to these sort of communist dictatorships where you've got statues of these leaders all over the place and photos of them all over the place and things like that. It sounds like Trump is trying to do something similar, and I think it's very worrying. A great one here. There's a council, a green-run council. I remember I said that the environmental movement, these so-called green people, they're like watermelons. They're green on the outside, red on the inside. Well, what they want to do is they want to charge firms who provide free car parking for their staff in order to discourage them from using their cars. And they claim that an employer, you've got a car park that your staff use, and they want to charge the employer a tax of between £300 and £1,250 per space per year. Oh, and it'll be good for in the environment and all this sort of stuff. Again, why are we not seeing things like this in China? I reported from Odyssey Central on the last show. They've just built this huge new train station. Why are they okay to do stuff like that, but we're not? It sounds like we're being sent back. We are devolving in a different sense to what Andy Burnham has plans for devolution. But we are devolving. We are going back to pre-industrial transport, things like that. They want us on bikes and all this sort of thing. While it's okay for countries like China to keep going streaking ahead, rather, with technology. And that, again, makes me very suspicious. Okay, so let's see what else I've got. I love this one. Before that, you'll see this yourself if you're in the UK. I'm going to get to the something for you to listen to section of the show shortly. And when you open it up, you get a YouTube advert. And I've opened it up twice this morning, and I've got an advert that relates to this article. BBC headline, "Call in 90 seconds, the fake portable air conditioners sweeping the internet." And I actually looked into this. What's been happening is the BBC have approached Meta and YouTube for comment, because these have been popping up all over Facebook and YouTube. And they're claiming this sort of little device it's been developed by like NASA engineers, and it's a fan, but it's like an air conditioning unit. It's one of these too good to be true things. And I sort of thought, well, I looked at it and I looked it up and I found it on Amazon, all these sorts of things. I thought, I got close to buying it. And then I saw reviews saying this is just nonsense. And when you see the advert, it shows like a tube inside gradually icing up like it would in your freezer. And that's all done by this machine. And so then that iced up metal tubing, metal piping, whatever, that brings air through there, so that's obviously going to be cold, and how wonderful it is, stuff like that. Earlier in the year, I looked at air conditioning because it was a bit tough last year, and I read some article. It was by a woman, I think she was on Amazon, and she wrote a lengthy piece about it. She had some sort of disability which made her struggle with heat, and she said, look, I have tried all these different things. If it's not a system where you put a pipe going outside your room, so you have to have a window where you have the pipe from the machine, if it's a portable air conditioner, going outside, all you're going to do, whatever they tell you, is you're just going to circulate the same warm air around the room. It's not going to have any effect. You need a pipe going outside that's going to suck the air in from... I think what it does is it pumps the air out. And so essentially what the machine's doing is it's sucking the warm air in, and it's filled with water that it keeps cool, that somehow it puts the air through that. But it has to pump that warm air out as well. And if you see any machine that doesn't do that, apparently it just doesn't work. And I remembered that, and that's when I looked into other things like the spray water bottle that works very well, although mine is leaking, unfortunately, lying on its side in my fridge. But yeah, I nearly got caught up with this nonsense, because when you are hot, you think, well, I'll try this. This may well work. But unfortunately, it's so many people have tried it. A BBC article has been made up out of it. And you have to ask yourself, the likes of YouTube and Facebook, that are well known for censoring people they do not like, including myself, they don't seem too bothered about censoring people making false claims to sell products. So maybe, you know, when you hear about these companies talking about, oh, brand risk, we can't have you using our product, it's a risk to our brand. Well, what aren't they worried about the brand risk for promoting products that are deliberately false and misleading? They say in the article that the imagery used in the advertisements has just all been AI generated. It says here, using visuals such as copper coils and metallic boxes to make the product seem more sophisticated. So in other words, the product doesn't even include what the video of the product is claiming it does, and they're getting away with it. And the funny thing is, I think it's down here near the bottom, it says the Advertising Standards Authority have said, that's in the UK, while we'll continue to take action where we see the rules being broken, the nature of some of the businesses behind these ads means enforcement alone isn't enough to stop the problem. Although the watchdog regulates paid-for adverts on platforms including YouTube and Facebook, they cannot issue fines themselves. Sounds like a nice little loophole that YouTube and Facebook have got over there. Why am I not surprised? Okay, I think I've got one more here. Here it is. There's a guy, or is it a group? The Institute for Public Policy Research have said that casting a vote in an election should be made mandatory, and if you refuse to vote, you should be fined. £10, they're talking about, a £10 fine. And my argument to this is, again, this is just communism. Now, if you want to do that, then you should not be allowed to prescribe any political parties. Because what they're doing here is they want to give you an Overton window and only allow parties to operate within that Overton window. And then if you don't like any of them because your beliefs fall outside of the Overton window that they've constructed for you, they want to fine you for it. So you either choose one of the people we present to you or we'll fine you. I mean, what sort of precedent is that set? But again, I'm for it if they allow people to vote for what they want to, for what they believe in. And before someone comes and says, well, prescribed political parties are prescribed because they promote terrorism, there's laws to prevent that. Okay? If you've got people going out and actually promoting this sort of stuff, then you deal with them under existing laws, not under prescription of political party. I mean, I've seen people who look like they're sitting down peacefully to me, who are being manhandled by police and arrested. So if anyone's causing violence there, it's the police that are disturbing people just sitting there quietly protesting with holding a placard in their hand. So who is the aggressor there? Who's the peaceful person? Who's the aggressor? So you can see where this is going. And I think, it just shows the level of power, the fact it's in the wrong hands, and how this push towards censoring everybody. It's really, really quite disgusting. And to come up with an idea like this when we're in the current situation, I think is pathetic. Okay, so let's go and see what I've got for you next. And that is the Something For You To Listen To section of the show, in which I tell you about the song you can listen to via the YouTube link in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. Today's song is Frankenstein by the Edgar Winter Group from their 1973 appearance, when I was born, 1st of February actually, on BBC Two's The Old Grey Whistle Test. Now, I never knew what The Old Grey Whistle Test meant, because it's a music show. I mean, Top of the Pops. You know what that means. Top of the Pops is the pop is music, pop charts, Top of the Pops, Top of the Pop charts. But The Old Grey Whistle Test. So I got this again from Wikipedia. The Old Grey Whistle Test, according to presenter Bob Harris, derived its name from a tin pan alley phrase from years before. When they got the first pressing of a record, they would play it to people they called the Old Greys, which were their doormen in grey suits. Any song their doormen could remember and whistle, having heard it just once or twice, had passed the Old Grey Whistle Test. Now, I'm at a loss for words to describe this Edgar Winter Group performance, but I can tell you this, whether you like it or you don't, you will agree that you have never seen anything quite like this before. It is highly amusing. The musicianship is also very good. It's a 9-minute instrumental piece, but we're not talking some minimalist boring stuff. We're talking real high energy, and I'm not sure if it's my thing or not, but when I was going through it again this morning to put it up, I couldn't draw my eyes away from it, because it's actually a video as well. It's a video off The Old Grey Whistle Test from 1973. So it's 53 years old as well, folks. There you go. Okay, and for the film review, I didn't have one here, so I'll grab one off the shelf. A film called State of Grace. Just have a little drink of water here. Now, this was one of my favourites. When I was at university, I made a very stupid decision. I used to go down to a video shop, and I used to rent Goodfellas, Cape Fear, Bad Influence, Bright Lights, Big City, State of Grace. I had these favourites that I'd rent. The amount of times that I rented them, I would have been better off just buying my own copy. Unfortunately, I didn't. But one of the ones I rented and re-rented was State of Grace. Now, it stars Sean Penn, Ed Harris and Gary Oldman. It was Gary Oldman's first Hollywood film. And when you look up people like Leonardo DiCaprio on Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt on Gary Oldman, and they tell you that when they were young actors starting out, this was the guy they were watching. This was the guy that they wanted to be like. Now, they didn't necessarily become like him, but his performance in this film, State of Grace, is stunning. It really is. You could argue it's a bit over the top, but it's just, you could see why he blew a lot of these young actors away the way that he did this. The film never got the recognition it deserved. And if you look up, I believe it's on Wikipedia, but it was released the same week as Goodfellas. And whereas Goodfellas was about the Italian mafia, this is about the Irish mafia, and it's a sort of, they're a deal to work with the Italian mafia. I believe they were called the Westies, the West Side. But let me read the back of this DVD for you. New York City's Hell's Kitchen is a pressure cooker of pent-up anger, and it's about to explode. Sean Penn, Ed Harris, Gary Oldman, Robin Wright, John Turturro and John C. Reilly deliver exceptional performances, according to The Hollywood Reporter, in this finely drawn tale of betrayal, redemption and guilt, according to Los Angeles. I presume that's the Los Angeles Times. That'll put you on the edge of your seat, according to Newsweek. The Hollywood Reporter said it was skillfully visualised, brilliantly conveyed, told with a raw and raging energy. Back to the description. Terry Noonan, Sean Penn, returns to his old neighbourhood with a score to settle. He's now an undercover cop, dead set on taking down an Irish mob family, headed by Frankie Flannery, Ed Harris, and his hot-headed brother Jackie, Gary Oldman. But when Noonan infiltrates the family, his old feelings for the Flannery's sister, played by Robin Wright, further heighten the stakes as he enters a violent showdown with them during a crowded St. Patrick's Day parade. It is a very good film. I found it at one of the car boot sales that I'm generally at this time. It's only every other Sunday, so it's not this Sunday, it's next Sunday. But I think it was 3 weeks ago I found it. And it's an American copy, it's Region 1. I can play Region 1. And it was 50p. And it's actually quite difficult to get here in the UK. If you type in State of Grace DVD or Blu-ray into, eBay. It's not the most expensive thing in the world, but I think it's £7 or £8. So finding a copy for 50p was quite good. Neither the Blu-ray nor the DVD has much of, in fact, any extras. It's just got the trailer. So it's a shame. It would have been nice to hear what was going on there. I remember reading a Gary Oldman interview some years ago, and he said he thought he'd lost the role when he got drunk in a limo with Sean Penn after he'd sort of met him. And Sean Penn, he was either still married to Madonna at that time or, the marriage had ended, but he was singing Like a Virgin to him in the limo. And he woke up and remembered what he'd done the next day and thought, that's it. But fortunately, Sean Penn obviously had a sense of humour. Okay, so let's see what's going on right now in the mainstream media. And should we start off with AP and see if I'm correct in the Lindsey Graham story being the top one? Just opening it up now. Top headline, no, US attacks Iran over ship being hit in Strait of Hormuz. Tehran lashes out again at Arab states. There's nothing. There's three headlines below that. Nothing about Lindsey Graham. Let's go over to Reuters, see if they've... See, it's the middle of the night in America. The very latest it could be is on the East Coast, and that would be 4:42 in the morning. Reuters top story again. US it strikes Iran, Tehran hits Gulf states, says Strait of Hormuz closed. So it looks like I've news-cucked both Reuters and AP. No, I haven't. Second story down on Reuters. Lindsey Graham, pivotal US Republican senator, dies suddenly at age 71. Earlier in his career, he was a vocal critic of US President Donald Trump before becoming one of his most loyal allies on Capitol Hill 11 minutes ago. So maybe I did use cuckum after all, because I did mention it more than 11 minutes ago, didn't I? Okay, let's have a look now at the Daily Mail, see what's going on over there. Top story. The top story is the England World Cup victory. I mean, it's a big thing over here. I was listening to the director's commentary of The Ward, which was John Carpenter's last film, starring Jared Harris, who's Richard Harris's son. And I know the name, but it's on the tip of my tongue. The woman who was married to Johnny Depp that Tim Refap likes, Amber Heard. Yeah, she's the lead female role in a psychiatric clinic, and Jared Harris plays the doctor. And he's John Carpenter's guest on the audio commentary of The Ward, which is very fun audio commentary to listen to, talk about all sorts of things. And the topic of football comes up, or soccer. And John Carpenter says, yeah, why do English people go on so much about the 1966 World Cup? And Jared Harris says, well, the fact is it's because we win it and we're just never going to win it again. And John Carpenter says, what do you mean? He says, look, won't go into that. It's just, you know. And that's how a lot of people feel in this country. I do feel as well. Home advantage, of course, the 1966 World Cup was played in England. And certain teams benefit more from, like, playing at home in their country. So, of course, if you're whoever you're going to play in the final, you're going to have a lot more English people there cheering you on than the opposition are going to have. And sometimes that acts like a 12th man, you know, to an 11-man team. So hold on a minute. Excuse me. But that's how I've always found that football in this country can be quite emotional. Weird things can happen when the supporters cheer you on. Whereas I think something like Germany, they're a lot more scientific in their approach, a lot more technical. And I remember my German girlfriend used to say, you know, the trouble with England is they never have a system. Germany play to a system, and that's why they win. But England is, these are all good players, and let's just throw them all out there. Of course, they now have a German coach, Thomas Tuchel, who I've rated for many years. He won the European Cup, I believe, with Chelsea, and then they got rid of him. They got rid of the other manager who won them the European Cup as well, Roberto Di Matteo. But they get rid of all their managers, it seems. Very trigger-happy. A guy who was instrumental in their rise to football dominance from being, put it this way, he bought the club for a pound, Ken Bates. He passed away yesterday at the age of 94. And he was the guy who sold it to Roman Abramovich. And that's when all the big money started piling in. So the top story on the Daily Mail is talking about the England victory. And below that we had a popular, a controversial Member of Parliament, popular with some people, not popular with others. She's no longer a Member of Parliament. Her name's Anne Widdecombe. I first heard a couple of days ago she died, and I thought, I didn't know there was anything wrong with her. She's one of these people that would pop up on television, on game shows, things like that. She did some dancing show. I saw her on a episode of Tenable, hosted by Life's Too Short actor. He was in Willow, things like that. I'm terrible with names today, but he's always fun. Great presenter. Warwick Davis. He did the Leprechaun films, which are really quite good. Sort of comedy horror. He comes across a very nice chap. She was on one of the teams on one of his shows. But then it came out later in the day that she'd been murdered. And then we hear that some 26-year-old guy had been arrested. Apparently it's not political. And then it's all, you know, it's all very vague. They don't want to tell you anything. Well, the latest is that a 28-year-old man has been arrested over the murder. Now, initially, people were talking about, because we had other politicians murdered in this country, such as Joe Cox and was it John Amis or Christopher Amis? I forget. One was Labour, one was Conservative. By people who disagreed with their views. Then people were talking about, did someone attack Anne Widdecombe? The consensus at the moment is this looks like some sort of break into the house or where she disturbed somebody, but that was when they were talking about a 26-year-old. Now they're talking about a 28-year-old who's been arrested, and they're not really saying what's gone on. So this is a story that will just develop over time. Okay, let's go over to the BBC and have a look at their top 10 as at this time. Many people in the UK will still be in bed because the kickoff wasn't until 10 o'clock. And I understand that that might have even been delayed last night. There was talk of it being delayed because of bad weather. When you look up the reports I've seen, it doesn't seem to say if it was delayed or not. But nevertheless, they wouldn't have got to bed till about midnight, I wouldn't have thought, because there was extra time. So, number 10 on the BBC, Anne Widdecombe murder probe, what we know so far. Number 9, Berlin Wall in garden breaches planning rules. Reported on that on last show. Number 8, how Aldi is taking on US supermarkets with its $4 almond butter. Number 7, the perfect football song, why England fans like Beckham and players love Wonderwall. That's the song by Oasis, which is probably one of my least favourite Oasis songs. I hate these ballads. Like, did any of you realise that one of the best-selling singles of all time was Girls' School by Wings? And you think, well, no, Mull of Kintyre. Well, yeah, but Mull of Kintyre and Girls' School was not an A-side and a B-side. It was a double A-sided single. And for me, Mull of Kintyre is some boring old track, but Girls' School is some sort of upbeat track. In fact, I looked at it recently as putting it as one of the Something For You To Listen To songs. In the post for this show, there's a YouTube for it, everything's there. But when I looked at the lyrics, they actually make me feel quite uncomfortable. You know, when I listen to stuff, I don't really sing along with it. Most of the lyrics, when I write them out for you, so that's what they said. When I sort of find them somewhere, I read them out for you, rather. I don't always know what they said. I remember that Purple Haze song by Jimi Hendrix. I always thought he said, excuse me while I kiss this guy. I saw an Ozzy Osbourne interview where he said the same thing. He says, what's he talking about? Excuse me while I kiss this guy. Well, actually, what he says is, excuse me while I kiss the sky. But it sounds like, while I kiss this guy. And I was quite pleased to hear Ozzy Osbourne heard it the same way as I did. And ears are very interesting. If you listen to any of Jeff Rentz's programmes with David John Oates on reverse speech, I'm regularly arguing with my headphones when, you know, David John Oates or Jeff Rentz will hear something in a certain way and I'll hear it in a different way. And then they'll play it back and you can sort of hear how they hear it their way and how I hear it my way. And it's completely different words at the end of it. So they're very subjective, hearing and ears. Anyway, let's move on to number 6. T-Rex could become most expensive fossil ever, but it's a problem for scientists. Number 5, fresh arrest in killing of Widdecombe and saved by the bell. That's the What the Papers roundup article, obviously. Number 4, US launches fresh strikes at Iran as Iran closes Strait of Hormuz. Number 3, we are living fewer years in good health. Is the NHS part of the problem? Number 2, US Senator Lindsey Graham dies after brief and sudden illness, his office says. And number 1, man arrested on suspicion of murder of Anne Widdecombe. Okay, so let's now go over to the alternative media, see what's going on over there. I see we're coming up to the hour mark. I knew it would be a longer show. Hopefully we can keep it shorter on Wednesday, when I still plan to come back with the next episode of I'm Talking To You, because there's a particular anniversary there. I've already got it written up that I have to do the show on that day to get the show title to be the anniversary on that day. So I'll leave you guessing for that one. If you look up the Wikipedia page for this Wednesday, you just look up Wikipedia, July the 15th, you can look down at all the events on that day and see if you can guess which one I've picked. You may well be right if you are that bored to undertake something like that between now and then. Okay, so let's go over to rents.com. We're going to do the independent stroke alternative media now. Scroll down to the headline section in the middle, which I've just sailed past. Top story, the monster El Nino of 2026 to roast Western United States next week with highs of up to 117 degrees Fahrenheit. It's 83 in the flat at the moment, looking at that. I prefer to use Fahrenheit than Celsius. It was higher earlier on when I woke up, but I managed to open all the windows and the balcony door, and there was quite a breeze blowing out there, so I got it down to about 26, which I think was about 76 Fahrenheit, 26 Celsius. I've got another thing next door that does it in Celsius. I can't alternate between the two. A little barometer with balls that go up and down, and they've all been down for the past few days, so it's been somewhere above 32 in that room, but that's as high up as it goes. If they all sink, then it's somewhere beyond that. I'm sure it will be above the 26 because I've closed everything to record this show. See if I can get it down again after I've finished. Let's go over to halturnerradioshow.com, see what's going on over there. Had a look at this earlier. He's got the Senator Lindsey Graham dead at 71 at the top of the website now. That wasn't there earlier. One thing that the top story when I looked earlier was about the US commences another round of attack upon Iran. And another thing that I can identify with, headline, house fire averted by accident, beware aftermarket laptop batteries from Amazon. That's the headline. And he had some batteries he bought for a laptop that he got on Amazon, so, you know, should all be fine. And just by chance, he was looking for something else and found that these were bulging. Now, I've had this happen to a phone with its original battery in it, and that's a Sony phone. And it just suddenly, the battery starts bulging, and that means it could blow. And then it could be flammable, could cause all sorts of problems. And it's happened not on just one of Sony phones, it's happened on two or three that I've had. Of this particular one, I think it's, I forget the model number, but it's all the same model number it's happened to, so I don't know if it's a bad model or something, but some of them I bought second hand, but definitely one of them was new. So I can't imagine that, well, whatever battery Sony put in, they sanctioned, that's my point. It came from Sony, so it's a problem I'm aware of, and yeah, you have to be aware of it. Another thing, when I was going through my mother's stuff years ago, started sorting stuff out for her, she had all these old sort of soft toys that someone had bought for, I don't know, that you put batteries in and you press a button and they wave their hands, you know, stuff like that. I think one of them was like a Billy Bass fish. And there were a couple that the batteries had just ruptured in and just, you know, you couldn't use them and you had to get the batteries out carefully and dispose of them carefully as well, because they'd blown and they, you know, made the toy unusable. They'd ruined that, but of course they could have done a hell of a lot worse. They could have caused the fire and all sorts. So if you do have things lying around that are battery operated, I do urge you to check. In fact, one time I ordered a personal CD player. I had a period of collecting old personal CD players, buying them on eBay, and I built on this lovely collection that I never used. I'm looking at them now because one of these things I put on display in my lounge, because to remind myself not to collect things just for the sake of it, because goodness knows what I spent on all this stuff, thinking it was fun at the time, but I've never used them. And if I could get all the money back now and have that instead, I'd gladly have it. But that being said, someone sent me a Sony player and I went to, you know, test it, opened the batteries out, and all these blown batteries in there. I couldn't believe it. And so I was quite angry. I mean, they shouldn't have gone through the post like that anyway. You know what I mean? So I just emailed the guy and I expected him to just do a straight refund, which he did, because obviously doesn't really want this to go any further. So be careful with leaving batteries in appliances that you're not using, can be a problem. Let's go over to earthnewspaper.com, Mark R. Elsis website. And he's got this moral party. It seems to be something that Mark has put together himself. I talked about moralparty.com. He's working on his site at the moment, I think, because I looked at it hour or so ago, and there was nothing for today, but we've got July the 12th, 2026. You have no idea what's coming. AI researcher Connor Leahy. That's a video at the top, 18 minutes, 42 seconds. That's as far as he's got so far. When I looked earlier, it had the July the 10th listing, so there's that there at the moment, a fresh video for you to look at that's only gone up in the last hour or so. And let's finish off with the Before It's News Top 10. Quick drink of water. I do apologise to any of you who feel annoyed that you've had two emails from me today, because I only generally send out one. You only get them if you subscribe to the website, but I only try and do one show a day, and you would automatically get that when it's published. But on a day that I do two, I did do two on a day not so long ago. I will always try to do the one show a week, but if I think of an idea that I think is going to be interesting to you, I'll do it, even if I've already... Today, if it was a day where I could have published a Bible reading, I wouldn't have published the Bible reading today. I'd have just done this show, but because it's a Sunday, and I always publish a parables on the Sunday at the moment, I didn't want to skip that. So there you go. Sunday for me always goes with Jesus Christ. Okay, so let's scroll down to number 10 on beforeitsnews.com. Went up 13 hours ago, 46 people viewing. Sheila Holm, terrifying warning, 7/11/26, the storm is raging. Number 9 went up 13 hours ago, 46 people viewing. Josh Reed, shocking truth, 7/11/26, these next few days are critical. Number 8 went up 13 hours ago, 56 people viewing. Charlie Ward, shocking intel, 7/11/26, the world is not ready for this. Number 7 went up 13 hours ago, 59 people viewing. Cliff High, urgent emergency, 7/11/26. Very scary times, really. What am I missing here? Some major thing has been going on yesterday that I've told you nothing about, but these people have got things to tell you about. Maybe you should be listening to them instead of me. Number 6 went up 10 hours ago, 73 people viewing. New Jim Willie, XRP, and July Summer Updates 2026. This interview is on fire. Number 5 went up 3 hours ago, 83 people viewing. Byington bombshell report, Vatican child sex trafficking exposed, Navy SEALs, Trump global military alliance. Number 4 went up 13 hours ago, 90 people viewing. David Nino Rodriguez, EBS is coming, 7/11/26, Trump gets nightmare news. Number 3 went up 2 days ago, 116 people viewing. Dr. Lee Merritt, end time alert, 7/10/26, there is no way to stop it. Number 2 went up 13 hours ago, 136 people viewing. Wan O'Savin, big intel, 7/11/26, tribunal. Trials, Gitmo trains, trigger event coming. And number 1 went up 7 hours ago, 196 people viewing. Judy Byington, Wan O'Savin, and Charlie Ward, shocking intel, 7/12/26. Trust the plan. It had to be this way, Q. Yeah, good old Operation Trust. Okay, let's play the closing music. There will be the concluding part of Deuteronomy tomorrow. And then a show with Peter on Tuesday, and a show, another I'm talking to you show, on Wednesday. So that's the plan. I hope you'll be back then. But until then, thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and bye for now.